It's spring, 2004. A woman driving a dusty brown sedan pulls up to the Netflix DVD warehouse parking lot. She's wearing a leopard print pantsuit and a poofed bob. She pulls a red envelope out of her purse and walks up to the steel door of the warehouse. She's a housewife on a mission. Can I help you, Biz? A man wearing a Netflix t-shirt and jeans sticks his head out. Hi, I'm a Netflix customer. Is this the right place to return my movie? I'm so anxious to get my next one. I thought I'd drop this off myself. The woman peers around the Netflix employee. Hey, is that where our movies come from? How interesting. Can I see how it works? I just love Netflix. I've told all my friends about it. Yep, this is it. You want to have a look? As the woman enters, she pulls her cell phone from her purse. Could you take my picture with that big machine over there? My friends will get such a kick out of it. She's pointing to the DVD sorting machine. Sure, go ahead, and then I'll give you the grand tour. The visiting Netflix superfan remarks on almost everything she sees, taking pictures as she goes through. What her tour guide doesn't realize is that this enthusiastic housewife is not acting alone. She's part of a bigger operation. She's an associate of a guy named Shane Evangelist, who runs Blockbuster Online, Netflix's nemesis. Evangelist has ordered his friends, his family, his business associates, anyone, to find a way to get behind enemy lines. Get our Netflix subscribers down to those distribution centers. Tell them to bring along a Netflix envelope and pretend to be returning a DVD. I don't care. We need information about how they're organizing their inventory and get some pictures inside of those warehouses. After about a dozen Netflix customers across the country just happened to drop by distribution centers for seemingly spur-of-the-moment tours and selfie sessions, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings gets suspicious. He orders warehouses to stop with the tours and yank down those Netflix signs so the public can't find them. As Hastings suspected, all those photos end up on the desk of Shane Evangelist at Blockbuster. Evangelist is determined to overcome Netflix's 7-year head start and technological superiority. And he thinks he's on to the secret of Netflix's success. He thinks it's figuring out how its distribution centers and website work together. He's totally unaware of Netflix's hidden trap door.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. We're in the trenches now with Netflix and HBO. At the end of the last episode, Netflix was looking ahead, planning to quietly take over the television networks. But before Reed Hastings and his team could do that, he had to beat Blockbuster. And at the moment, Blockbuster had its foot on Netflix's neck. I hear what you're thinking. How did that happen? With Netflix so far ahead of the game, how did Blockbuster catch up and still manage to lose? Well, it has everything to do with all the amateur spycraft or the dirty tricks you just heard about. Evangelist thought he was taking shortcuts. They were actually dead ends. Shane Evangelist's plan for Blockbuster was to duplicate Netflix's superior website and distribution works, but make them bigger and better. And that strategy worked for a while, until everything went upside down. And here's how it happened. In January, just a few months before Netflix's fans started showing up at distribution centers, Shane Evangelist and Ben Cooper, the head of marketing for Blockbuster Online, were again at the Sundance Film Festival. You see, at the time, Sundance was kind of like the Super Bowl for the DVD rental business. Every year, that's where DVD rental companies checked in on the competition, see how they were doing against the other guys as they bought inventory for their stores. And they schmoozed with filmmakers and studio heads hoping to strike deals. Well, Evangelist and Cooper were strolling down a snowy sidewalk full of people when they peered into a crowded restaurant. Inside, past an elaborate ice sculpture, lots of recognizable filmmakers, studio executives, and stars. They were awestruck. Clearly, this was an invitation-only affair. And then they saw that familiar, dreaded red logo, and Blockbuster's Shane Evangelist wanted in.
"We've got to figure out a way to get in there and see what they're up to."
Blockbuster's content buyer was an old hand at Sundance. Suddenly, he took on the air of authority. "Follow me. There's always another way to get in." They followed him to the back of the restaurant, where a single security guard stood at the door. The buyer tried a bluff.
"Yeah, I'm Reed Hastings. I'm with Netflix."
"No, you're not Reed Hastings, and I'm calling the police." The trio scurried away. It was a humiliating, hasty retreat, and a painful reminder that Blockbuster Online was not only second to Netflix. In the movie world, it was virtually invisible. But sometimes, shame can be a powerful force. Evangelist vowed to turn the tables on Netflix by the next Sundance Festival in 2005.
Blockbuster digs deeper into its pockets to take down the technologically superior rival, Netflix.
Blockbuster CEO John Antiocco had handed Evangelist $25 million with orders to do whatever it took to take down Netflix. John gave him 6 months to build the website. They set the launch date for summer of 2004. Evangelist was so fired up at the chance to finally move Blockbuster into the digital age that he almost forgot that he had no idea how to do that. At 28, with no relevant experience, he'd been handed the keys to what was basically a tech startup facing a technologically superior rival with a 7-year head start. An interesting guy, Shane Evangelist, former college gymnast who could still do a backflip from a standing start. He gobbled sugar all day, Twinkies, Ho-Hos, and Dr. Pepper mainly. But he had an inexhaustible drive, and he could motivate people to do the crazy things that he asked. That's why Antiocco gave him the money in the first place and the freedom to do what he wanted. Shane Evangelist knew next to nothing about computers or e-commerce, and Blockbuster had a long history of sucking at technology, so there wasn't anyone in-house to help him in his deep dive into the tech world. Now, given the enormity of the challenge, Evangelist did rather well. But the fatal strategic error was trying to mimic only what he could see at the distribution centers and on the website. At Blockbuster, Evangelist created a guerrilla operation of sharp programmers, marketers, and operations specialists. They were jammed into an airy, large space, their laptops glowing on tabletops. Their office was in a seedy part of downtown Dallas. It was furnished with beanbag chairs, Nerf cannons, and a large photo of Reed Hastings plastered over a magnetic dartboard, darts ringing his face. Sort of a cross between a frat house
and a Texan idea of what a Silicon Valley startup was supposed to look like. Each day, evangelists checked in to this haven of masculinity to gauge their progress. "So, what do you guys have for me today?" Ben Cooper responded. "Anything you can think of, we're trying, boss. We hired people to sign up for Netflix in several states. They'll tell us about changes on the website, how fast their movies get there, any promotions Netflix is doing, that kind of thing." To figure out what made the Netflix website tick, 24 contract software engineers were pulling it apart, pixel by pixel and page by page. With that intel, they would make an exact replica, except with Blockbuster's yellow and blue colors. Shane Evangelist urged on his team. "You guys are doing great. You're doing in months what it took Netflix 7 years to do. And we can thank Reed Hastings for teaching people to go online to rent movies, and then we'll do better." While the engineers could replicate the site, they had no clue about how Netflix collected and used the data to turn people into Netflix junkies. These data-fed algorithms created different homepages for each subscriber. And Netflix noticed when people were waiting too long for their movies or had no movies at all in their queues. This insight allowed Netflix to fix problems almost before they happened. And they could build on that, predict new trends. Alas, Blockbuster's Shane Evangelist didn't know how much he didn't know. But what he did suspect was that Netflix subscribers probably wouldn't quit the popular service for a clunkier Blockbuster Online unless it was cheaper and offered more. So he told his operations manager, J.W. Kraft, to make sure Blockbuster Online launched with more movies than Netflix. That meant Kraft had to find more than 20,000 titles, practically every non-porn DVD ever made. Well, it was more than just no porn. Blockbuster Corporate actually insisted that the online service stick with its family values. That sharply limited its options. Kraft had to be blunt with his boss. "Shane, we had to cut a lot of titles because of corporate sex and nudity rules. We're going to have to use unrated films to make the numbers, but we're going to have to watch them all first." "Whatever it takes, Kraft." He set up some monitors with hoods over them if you need to, just, you know, in case anything surprising happens. Nobody's offended. Blockbuster Online launched with 25,000 titles. To get to that number, it included some rather unusual options. DVDs of fires burning in fireplaces, fish swimming in aquariums, and some rather amateur independent and foreign films. Not exactly marquee stuff. But at this juncture, Evangelist was not too concerned with quality because he was convinced he could draw customers away from Netflix with quantity, plus coupons for free rentals at Blockbuster stores. The last piece of the puzzle, Evangelist assumed, was deconstructing Netflix's distribution network. Everywhere a Netflix warehouse sprang up, it was a sign that nearby Blockbuster brick-and-mortar stores were hemorrhaging business. So to bring those customers back to the blue and yellow, Evangelist knew he needed to master overnight delivery. So he turned to Kraft. "I've talked to the people at the post office to see if they'd give us any advice on how Netflix does things. They say we're going to have to figure it out ourselves." Kraft learned the locations of 24 of its rival distribution centers from the consumer blog Hacking Netflix. But he needed to know what was going on inside. That's when he unleashed his corps of amateur spies. What the smuggled photos didn't reveal was that Netflix's distribution centers, like its website, had their own brains. A special algorithm sucked in data from Netflix customers and spit out maps every 6 months showing where distribution centers should move to ensure overnight delivery. That algorithm found the cheapest delivery routes and calculated demand for each and every DVD. Outside of the Netflix chiefs, there was perhaps only one other person who would understand the importance of this. Mario Sabelli, a financial analyst who covered Blockbuster and Netflix, toured the Netflix distribution center in Long Island to get a firsthand look. It was part of his job. Sabelli walked around the warehouse with its manager, a former aerospace engineer. The man showed him complicated charts with performance metrics posted on a wall. When he returned to his office, Cibele gave his verdict to his clients.
There's not a snowball's chance in hell that Blockbuster can do this.
Cibele saw what the rest of Wall Street ignored, something Shane Evangelist missed too. As Cibele put it,
"It is the unseen aspects of Netflix's business model and its long head start which differentiate it from the competition and may allow Netflix to retain the leading position in the industry for some time to come."
Let's get ready to rumble!
Talking to me? It's your wake-up call, pal.
Shane Evangelist launched Blockbuster Online in August 2004 with a huge marketing campaign and a self-congratulatory launch party. He had made his deadline, just as he promised Antiocho that he would. But amid all the toasts and backslapping, Evangelist knew in his gut that Blockbuster Online wasn't really ready for prime time. The site was crashing under the heavy traffic spurred by its lavish marketing campaign. Customers in chat rooms complained that the online version of Blockbuster was as bad as Blockbuster stores. Ouch. They canceled their subscriptions at an alarmingly high rate. By the time the initial fanfare died down, Evangelist told Blockbuster marketing chiefs what the numbers had already told them. "I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to have to do something. I'm losing customers that I can't afford to be losing because I haven't paid for them yet." Evangelist needed to make his customers want the service. They needed to like it more. But cultivating fans would take time that he didn't have. In the meantime, he devised a plan to keep Netflix from advertising to people who hadn't tried online rentals yet. These people had no expectations of Netflix-level service, overnight delivery, unique home pages tailored to their movie tastes, and a website that functioned flawlessly. These were the perfect targets for Blockbuster Online. Evangelist planned to buy up as much online advertising as possible through partnerships with the biggest ad portals out there, MSN, AOL, and Yahoo. Remember, this was before Google was the monster that it is today. But Blockbuster's massive ad buy had some unintended consequences. They did make consumers aware of online rental, but 70% of them signed up with Netflix anyway. Antiocho responded by announcing a steep price cut for Blockbuster Online, and sales climbed fast. Evangelist decided it was time to showboat.
"You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price."
The Super Bowl ad was a huge success, landing some 750,000 new subscribers for Blockbuster Online, nearly doubling the size of its subscriber base. Evangelist was so damned relieved and pleased. Then, Evangelist got a note from his rivals at Netflix. "Great Super Bowl ad. Thanks for helping us grow 118% this quarter. Sincerely, the Netflix marketing team." Shane Evangelist's sheer persistence and a mighty marketing campaign eventually made a dent in Netflix's subscriber growth. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings admitted to underestimating Evangelist and his team, but he assured investors that Blockbuster couldn't afford to keep its marketing juggernaut going.
"They threw everything at us this quarter but the kitchen sink," he told investors.
When Hastings arrived at Netflix's headquarters the very next day, there was a large box waiting for him in the lobby. Blockbuster had sent him a present, a kitchen sink.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
As the 2005 Sundance Film Festival rolled around, neither Netflix nor Blockbuster had landed a fatal blow. They were both still in play. But Shane Evangelist believed he had successfully deconstructed his rival's website and distribution system, and now he was ready to party because he believed that Blockbuster was about to snuff out Netflix. At Sundance, Evangelist copied Netflix's hip moves from earlier festivals right down to the last detail. He hired a dozen traffic-stopping models to stalk the streets of Park City, dressed in white parkas with Blockbuster logos, sort of cooler, prettier counterpoints to Netflix's red-jacketed troops. Celebrities waited to be taken into the interview suite, hosted by Blockbuster and Entertainment Weekly, so they could plug their festival films. Everything was marvelous, darling, just the way that Evangelist had planned. He remembered the humiliation, standing outside the Netflix party a year earlier, and he felt it all evaporate. It was liberating, almost intoxicating. As they drove to a premiere of the Keanu Reeves film Thumbsucker, Shane Evangelist was jawboning in the company's limo when Blockbuster's Ed Stead caught sight of Netflix CEO Reed Hastings hurrying down the sidewalk. Stead ordered the driver to pull up beside Hastings in their Cadillac Escalade. Stead rolled down the window and grinned. "Hey, Reed, are you going to the Thumbsucker premiere?"
"Yeah, Ed. I'm running late."
Hastings stopped, waiting for Stead to offer him a ride.
"Yeah, we're going there, too."
Stead turned to the driver.
"Okay, take off." "Hey, Reed, good luck getting there on time."
As the car drove away, leaving a cloud of fumes, Reed stood in mute astonishment. The Blockbuster execs may have left Hastings momentarily breathless and befuddled, but what they didn't get was that Hastings had already arrived. Blockbuster and its peers would soon learn that they were late. Late for the revolution. While Blockbuster spent all its resources trying to catch Netflix, Hastings used that time to leverage Netflix's outsider status to cultivate a new generation of filmmakers who told stories in new, more engaging ways. See, Hastings wasn't just interested in peddling DVDs of movies that had already been made. He wanted to make movies. He was already making plans to make and distribute movies, but he didn't want to set off alarms at the cable companies or in Hollywood studio boardrooms. If Blockbuster had taught Hastings anything, it was to act humble publicly and keep your real ambitions under wraps. Time Warner, one of the world's media giants, didn't notice that scrappy Netflix had snuck in the back door. As the head of Time Warner told a reporter, "Netflix isn't an 800-pound gorilla. I'd say Netflix is more like a 200-pound chimp." That is on the next episode of Business Wars.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm your host, David Brown. Gina Keating, author of the book Netflixed, wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt. Our executive producers are Hernan Lopez and Ben Adair for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect.